And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by Zaxby's. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I am great, man. This is a big-time weekend. Even with all the COVID cancellations in college, there are some big games on the horizon. And then this weekend, in terms of the NFL game, it's a win or go home for some of these teams. Like, it is must-win weekend, and that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we got a fun episode today, too. We're going to talk about the top five of the draft, what it would look like right now, what we see. There is some potential storylines to keep an eye on. We'll touch a little bit on some of these other quarterback situations around the league. We want to hit that as well. But Buck, I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm going, like, sometimes you have to say, we got a pretty good gig, man. Like, this week, so we're doing these Amazon games as well as what we do at NFL Network. So we got a twofer this week because we had a Tuesday game with the Cowboys and the Ravens. Now we turn around Thursday night and we've got another one here. Keeping an eye on that, which is a great game with the Patriots and the Rams. I've got Charger games on each side of the weekend. So this is a 4 games in 7 days for me, Buck. I got so many teams dancing around in my head right now.
I'm going to say this, and I know some people worry about saturation. I kind of like the Tuesday football thing.
I did too. Like, I did too.
I kind of like the Tuesday football. I don't know how you do it going forward. Like, the Tuesday-Sunday thing, I think, is probably hard. But I do wonder how you do it going forward. But
then I'll be honest. I like Tuesday better than Thursday. I mean, I don't know if we're allowed to say that, but I actually like it better than Thursday because it kind of completes the week. Whereas Thursday's out on an island, kind of like all out by itself.
Yeah, because there's nothing behind it. But I do wonder scheduling, like when you go from a Tuesday, is it unfair to the teams that are playing on Tuesday that then turn around and play on Sunday? I'm going to admit, I like the Monday doubleheader. I mean, I kind of like the lead-in game before the Monday night game. So I think there's a lot to discover. And I think, obviously, in our league, we find a way to slice it off and profit. I think when you look at the numbers, because the ratings have been tremendous, and I know everyone is at home, but I think there's a lot to consider.
Like that for all the other sports, though.
Yeah,
like,
I know that it's a lot to consider going forward.
All right, let's jump into this a little bit here, because as we stand right now, and we'll see, we got a few weeks left in the season, but it looks like this: top of the draft, we've got Jets 1, Jags 2, Bengals 3, Cowboys 4, Chargers 5. So we look at this first. There are a lot of different ways we can look at this thing, but let's start with this conversation. We had this one the other night during the game, which was buying stock. Those five teams right now, you can buy stock for where they're going to be, let's say, 3 years from now. Who would be the number one stock you would buy out of those teams 3 years from now?
Well, now I'm gonna have a different answer because I was caught off guard. I'm gonna say I would go all in on Jacksonville right now, just because of combination of picks that they have available, the amount of salary cap space that they have, and depending upon who new leadership is, someone who knows exactly what they're doing and has a really good plan. I think that is an ideal job because you got to drop the quarterback in, and you have an opportunity if you finish right now at 2 to get one of the quarterbacks that you want. You drop a young quarterback in and you surround them with talent. I think this is one where you can get up and going pretty quickly to the right program.
That's a good one. I want to give you a couple thoughts here. So I'm looking this up as we go because I was curious about this. So I said 3 years from now because the Chargers is going to be my pick. Obviously, everybody knows I call the games, full disclosure.
I mean, we're doing both. We're both kind of doing the homer thing because I work for the Jaguars. You see those teams.
And so you know the potential that exists there, right? So when I'm looking at this Charger team and I'm going, okay, 3 years from now, Keenan Allen, Buck, he's been in the league for 8 years, but Keenan Allen is 28 years old. So 3 years from now, he's going to be 31, but he's still going to be, you know, his game is not predicated on speed. So I don't think Keenan Allen at 31 is going to be a lot different than Keenan Allen at 28. Like, he's still going to be a really good player. But the one that's interesting, Joey Bosa is 25. Herbert, I believe, is 22 right now. So these guys are going to be right in their prime at your premier positions, and now you can sprinkle in around them. And hopefully, you know, you're able to keep Derwin James healthy. I mean, that's going to be the big one because he's still really young. So you're going to have your best players are still right in the middle of their prime, and now you're adding in a top five pick this year as well as whatever else you want to do and free agency and the such. So I think I'm pretty bullish on them. I would have them as number one, but I do think kind of along the lines you were saying with the Jets if they have 1-1 and Lawrence is what we think he can be, and they've got all these extra picks to build in around Trevor Lawrence, I mean, that could be really, really good group here in 3 years.
Yeah, and I think that is a rebuild that's a different rebuild, right? Because I know they have significant cash space. They have picks. They have to get the quarterback. But I think what you're doing is, because this is a team that is stripped to the studs, I think you have to rebuild it the way that we know championship teams are built. So I'm thinking strong commitment to building up the offensive and defensive lines, making sure that your defense can carry you. Cause I think in that division, it's really important to have a dominant defense, because when you look at the Dolphins, you look at the Bills, even with the Patriots, they all play really good defense. I don't think you can just be an offensive heavy team and catch up on them. And I think stylistically, you have to play a certain way, in my mind, in New York to be successful. And I know Rex Ryan didn't win and win at a high level there, but they went to two AFC championship games playing a style that I think is very reminiscent of what Joe Douglas is familiar with in Baltimore. They beat you up. They ran the ball. They played great defense. They got, I would say, opportunistic quarterback play. It should be different maybe because we're going to anticipate Trevor Lawrence being a much better player than Mark Sanchez was for the Jets. But I do think there's something to that grit and grind style that you have to play in New York. So let's talk about these two other teams, because I'm curious about the Bengals and what you think about the Bengals in terms of their thing. Because when I look at the Bengals, what I like about the Bengals is you have the young quarterback in Joe Burrow. He should bounce back from that injury. We've seen many players bounce back from ACLs and come back and play at even a higher level. I like the weapons that they have around him, and Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins, Joe Mixon. They have that. They need to pay attention to the offensive line, and I think they have picks, and I think they need to move on from A.J. Green. I think there's a lot of promise there. The problem with the Bengals, the division that they play in. The division that they play in with Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. They don't go anywhere. Yeah, they don't get any breaks. So, I mean, you talk about having to do a tremendous job of rebuilding to just catch up with the teams that are already there. Very, very difficult challenge. It's a hard job.
All right, so I have our championship checklist that we used to go through. So it was one quarterback, two pass rushers, three offensive playmakers, three defensive playmakers, three quality offensive linemen. So when you kind of look at it from that standpoint and you kind of go through these teams, it's interesting to kind of see where they are. We've touched on the Bengals. So the only other team with the Cowboys, you want to scrimmage the Cowboys through this one?
I think the Cowboys is the hardest one to do. See, because the Cowboys thing is, when you're the decision maker with the Cowboys, you got to separate your heart from business decisions. And when I'm looking at this team, I don't know how to improve this team on defense without jettisoning some of the old talent that they have. I think you have to move on from Jalen Smith. You gave him a big contract, but I think you have to move on. Sean Lee finally has to go. You have Alden Smith and all these other guys that are older. I think the way this team has to be built, I think you have to pay Dak Prescott, and then you have to be younger on defense. Mm-hmm. And you almost have to follow what I call the Indianapolis Colts model. The Indianapolis Colts have kind of committed to playing a certain way. They put some money in the defense with DeForest Buckner, but young, cheap talent playing in a simple scheme that allows you to play young guys. I think if you're Dallas, you have to go with that approach. But the funny thing is, DJ, they just had that approach and they blew it up with Jason Garrett.
The same
Rob
guy.
Rob Marinelli, Indianapolis,
all came from Dallas. Eberflus.
I mean, that's what they were doing. And so, but I think that is the right approach. That's how you have to build a team. Once you pay the quarterback, you have to change a little bit of what you think about when it comes to draft and building up your defense.
All right. So I'm going through here. So let's say that they stay, and we'll get to the Dak conversation here in a second, but quarterback, if healthy, Dak, they're good there. Pass rushers. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence has been a little bit underwhelming this year. He started to come on in the last month or so, but I'm going to still give him. They got one. I mean, they're paying him as such. I don't think they have another one. They could really use an interior guy that can get home. So that's a to-do list is one pass rusher. Offensive playmakers, I mean, CeeDee Lamb is definitely part of that going forward. You've got one of those. You know, in terms of the long term going forward, I don't know that I put Zeke in there.
No, but I get that. But they're so stuck now because they paid him before he even got to the end of his rookie deal. So they don't really have a choice unless they just, I mean, bite the poison pill. Like,
I mean, look, let's give him the combination there between Zeke and Pollard. That's a playmaker, you know, a mixture there. Pollard's got more juice. But so I can give him. And then you've got You've got Amari Cooper. So I can make a case that they've got – they're okay in the offensive playmaker department if just for the sake of this discussion. So let's say that they're 3 for 3 there. Defensive playmakers, that's where there's none. Work to be done.
Zero. Zero. Right,
who do you hang your hat on there?
Nobody. And the problem is this. So there's two ways that you can go if you're the Dallas Cowboys. You can go and say, we're going to go all in on offense. And we're going to make our offense so prolific that we're like the Kansas City Chiefs, where we know that when we walk in the stadium, we got a 30 spot to work with. And so the only way that they can do that is they have to pour all their resources back into the offensive line, because that offensive line is not what people talk about.
So that checklist is 3 quality offensive linemen. Zach Martin's still there.
Zach Martin, Lyle Collins, you got to move on from Tyron Smith. You got to get a young guy. When you're sitting at 4 in the draft, I'm getting an offensive tackle. I know people will talk about being cute and, hey, you can get one in the second round. No, I want one of the top guys. I want a guy that I can insert and play right away to get it done. And even if he has to start out at guard or whatever, I need to get one, because every year since 2017, Tyron Smith has been talked about, but he never finishes the season. And so you have to get a guy. And so if I have a dominant offensive line, like we talked about, 3 studs on the offensive line, the playmakers in Coop and CeeDee Lamb, I'm not worried about really re-signing Michael Gallup. I think I can find a wide receiver in the draft at any point. I have the running back and the quarterback. I think that should be good enough to get you there. And then you got to figure out how to fix the offense while the offense is rolling.
So hear me out on this one. So it's one of those things where you're going to have to shed some of these contracts, no doubt. But I'm looking at this defensive playmaker thing, and that's really concerning to me. The one I put in there, and he's hurt, so we only played 9 games, is Diggs. So at corner, Diggs, I think, has got a chance to be a big-time playmaker for them on the back end. Now, he got a little blood on his hands. He's given up some plays down the field, but he makes plays on the ball, which, man, you start sitting there thinking, man, if they had Trevon Diggs and they had somehow found a way to keep Byron Jones, like, you've got 2 big, athletic, physical corners. You can kind of build that defense around those two guys. So I'm looking at it saying, man, if you could maybe get an offensive lineman in free agency – you still have a couple other pieces there that if everybody's healthy and Tyron, even if you don't count on Tyron Smith, just keep Zach Martin, these other guys healthy. I think you can get by there and for right now. But, man, if you could – and I just watched this corner, J.C. Horn, and I love Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech. Pat Surtain's a good player. So, man, pairing up another corner, and then you have 2 kind of young, real athletic playmaking corners.
Yeah,
that's something I would consider as I'm kind of looking through this checklist here, Buck. I mean, they got to get some more guys on defense that can make a play.
They do have to get some more guys on defense. I think here would be the thing in the way that we prioritize things, ranking. And I think we would do this on draft boards. Would you rather have the offensive tackle in this draft or the cornerback? Like, which one is going to give you more bang for your buck, not only in the short term, but in the long term? I think that would be the conversation that we would have in the room.
And I think if it's the same, in 2020, you go tackle because it's an offensive game.
Yeah. So I think that's the conversation, but I don't disagree with you. I also think they have to have the conversation on if they're going to go forward with Mike Nolan as the defensive coordinator, then I think it's really important that everyone is on the same page, because I don't know if the coaches drove their offseason endeavors in terms of the players that they signed and who they drafted, or if that was a scout deal, but it has to be a better marriage and synergy between the players that you have and the scheme that you're running. Because right now it's flawed. It hasn't worked. And we saw it on Tuesday night. Like, it was an epic disaster in terms of their inability to stop the run. And they don't have any playmakers. So you have to figure out who can they bring in to make plays. And typically the guys who make plays are the guys that you take at the top of the board.
So here's an interesting one, because I'm just looking at it. It's fun. We could really do this with every team in the league, and maybe we'll do that down the line. But if we go back up to the Jets, who are picking at 1, good news is they've got a lot of picks and they've got a lot of cash. But, man, they've got a lot of these spots to fill. If you look at the quarterback, let's say that the pick with the first overall pick is going to solve the quarterback. So you've got that one. So you're good there. Pass rushers, Quinnen Williams is turned into that guy. So they've got, and I think it's harder to find the inside pass rusher than it is even to find the edge rusher. But they need to find a complimentary edge rusher. But they got 1 of the 2. Offensive playmakers, I'll give them 1. I mean, you look at Mims, to me, is an offensive playmaker. But they need 2 more guys. there. Defensive playmakers. So when we talk about defensive playmakers, we're talking about the second and third level. Zero. I mean, you're hoping Ashton Davis, but you can't say that at this point in time.
No, I mean, we're talking about playmakers. I think it's important to distinguish. Some people like, oh, he's my favorite player. He's a leading tackler. Like, no, we're talking about a high level,
blue chip,
all pro slash Pro Bowl caliber playmaker. Not Pro Bowl because of fan votes, but Pro Bowl because his dominance shows up on tape, and you're like, that is one of the best guys at his respective position. And so, man, that. DJ, that's
quality offensive lineman. Quality offensive lineman. You need three. They've got one.
And so
that's a lot of holes in the boat.
And so you're talking about multiple years that you, because you can't do that all in one offseason.
Yeah.
That's multiple years while also bringing in, expectedly, a new coaching staff and a new. That is a lot at one time.
So hit me on this one philosophically, and I think this has changed. You've got all these things we just mentioned. When you prioritize them, Buck, I honestly, if I'm solving one problem at a time, like I'm looking at, okay, I'm going to draft a quarterback 1-1. Everything in this first year is about him.
Yeah,
everything's about him. I've got all his picks, and almost like we saw Matt Rhule do the opposite, right? He went all defense, but they don't have that quarterback right now. Mm-hmm. I think once you see them get, you know, Teddy Bridgewater's their kind of their bridge guy.
Once it works, because once they get good,
yeah,
that's when you can drop the rookie quarterback in or the young quarterback in. So I think for them, and I think
there's two different ways to do it.
Yeah. And I think Matt Rhule knows, okay, it'll probably take me 2 years to get this defense up and going. By the time they're going in year three, Teddy Bridgewater being the last year of his deal, that is actually the perfect time for us to draft a quarterback, and everyone kind of goes that way. What you're talking about with the Jets is the Indianapolis Colts model with Andrew Luck. When they drafted Andrew Luck and they took – it was like Noah's Ark. They took twos. Give me two tight ends and give me two things. I think that is it. And if I'm the Jets, it's a mix of young and old. I want not real old, but some free agents to throw at it that we can get. But I think this is the year that we're going to fix the offense. We're going to – throw resources at the offensive line. We're going to add some more playmakers. We have the quarterback. And this year we know we're going to take our lumps, but we're committed to fixing the offense. And then next year is let's find a way to.
Well, to me, it depends on when the opportunity strikes to get the quarterback. So when you're picking 1-1, you're taking a quarterback. I think like you're saying, the perfect world is you build up your team. And that's why we've seen like Kansas City was in a great spot because they had built up a talent base, traded up to get Mahomes. So now you have a good talent base, insert the rookie quarterback, and now you can hit the ground running right away. But when you're picking 1-1, that's your time. You got to take the quarterback. So now you've got to take the quarterback, and now you've got to try and fill in around him. So to me, I want to get him up and running and playing well, even if we're losing games 34-31. If our young quarterback is progressing and showing signs, that's good. And then what you're going to have to do is, as you know, if you can't get it done in the rookie contract with a championship level team, you're going to have to rely on defense young. You're going to be drafting a lot of defense young, fast, athletic, cheap on the defensive side of the ball.
Okay. And so with that, see, because here's what I want people to understand when we think about the team building process, and this is why everyone has to be in unison and in sync. So if we're talking about the overarching premise is we're going to be young and cheap on defense, then the people that you hire to coach that side of the ball,
good call.
They need to be great teachers, and they need to be able to employ a scheme that enables young guys to get on the field and play at a high level. So you can't have this grizzled guy trying to do this automatic front and check system that's very complex and your guys play slow. Everything has to line up. If we're going to be committed to playing young guys, then our scheme needs to be simple enough that they can get on the field, and our coaches need to be great teachers to develop them on the grass in practice.
I love that. I love it. And to me, it's premium resources would go to the offense, and then you're going to try and throw some numbers at the defense. So in other words, hey, our first, you know, I think the Jets have two ones, a two threes, I think, in this draft, and they've got two ones in the following draft. But I'm sitting there going, okay, two ones, quarterback, offensive lineman, you got the second round pick. Could be a another playmaker on offense or what have you. And then after that, so those are your first three dudes. Now it's like, okay, now I've got your two threes. Maybe those two threes are corners. Maybe those two threes are you know, a corner and an edge rusher that are kind of just upside guys, development guys. But those are, that's the, their defense is going to have to win out of the third, fourth, fifth round. You're going to, and that's what Seattle did. Look what Seattle, how they built their good teams. Their defense was Bobby Wagner in the second round and Sherman in the fifth round and Chancellor, all those guys outside of the premier round, so to speak.
Yeah, and it has to be a commitment from top to bottom. And the commitment has to be, hey, here's how we're going to build the team. Everyone in this room needs to be on board, coaches and scouts. We have to be committed to not only drafting younger players, we got to be committed to putting them on the field. And you also have to spend time with them. There, you know, DJ, we've been around the thing. There's some coaches that don't like to spend the extra time working with the young guys or whatever. Well, you better make sure that you have the right set of teachers in there. And so it will be very interesting to see when you go about making these plans, like how in lockstep is the general manager and coach in that process? And does the general manager have the bandwidth or the wherewithal to understand, okay, this guy is coming from a situation that is similar to where we are? Because I also think that is important. I think it's important that the people that you hire, the head coach that you hire, he understands the challenges that he's facing. He's not coming from a place where he's been given everything. He understands, okay, I got to build this from the ground up. And I'm very, very comfortable living in this world. The Matt Rhule example to me is what that is. Matt Rhule took over two programs in college that were not ready-made spots. Built up Temple, built up Baylor. So when he came to Carolina to build it up, it wasn't overwhelming. It wasn't daunting because he's like, okay, I know how to do this. And I think it's really important, even if it's a first-time coach, that he understands what he's dealing with and he has been around people that have – he's had a vested interest or a big part in building up a program that is like that.
One of the things, if you're – you know, Jacksonville, who has a ton of picks. We've talked about the Jets having a ton of picks. And both of – you know, look, we assume the Jets will be looking for a head coach. Jacksonville's already you know, I think we're all, we assume both those teams are looking for head coaches. So if that's the case, to me, when you're going through the interview process, I'd like to know, hey, whether it's a college coach or an NFL coach, can you give me real examples of players that were brought into your program and then show me how you develop them, you know, 3 years, 4 years down the line? Like, give me, I want names. I want examples. Show me how, what you got and what you made them, because We're fixing to give you a ton of young dudes, man, and you're going to have to make them better.
I want the developmental plan. I want to see what it looks like, and I want tangible examples that I can look at and I can go back and I can reflect, and I'm going to take my time doing this process before I hire to make sure that I really vet it out. We'll say this, and this won't necessarily be to the, hey, we're connecting dots and saying, but this is why when you tweeted out the conversation or the thing about Marvin Lewis and everyone was taken aback, I don't think people really lifted up the hood and understood why Marvin Lewis may have more traction in this cycle than other cycles. What Marvin Lewis was able to do in Cincinnati, when you now look back on it, you have a greater appreciation for it, because we just talked about the Bengals and what they have to climb. They have to get past the Browns, the Ravens, and the Steelers to kind of be in the mix. Well, Marvin went to Cincinnati when they were down, and for him to win, what, four division titles, seven playoff appearances.
With that division we just talked about, that's with stacked.
That same division with the same, I mean, look, philosophically, those teams were exactly the same. He was able to do it, be on the positive side of a 500 record and all that. And people will point to not winning a game in the playoff. Sometimes that's random.
It's his fault that they dove at Carson's knees on a team they had that was good enough to win a Super Bowl.
Is it their fault that Vontaze Burfict lost his mind and when they had a game that was wrapped up against the Pittsburgh Steelers? All that comes into play. But I think what we're talking about is understanding how to build a program and being okay knowing, hey, man, this is going to be hard. I'm not going to have everything at my disposal. I can make this happen. We can make this happen, hiring the right coaches and putting this team in the right situation. And so it is very, very interesting looking at that and looking at some of the other guys, because people have talked about Jim Caldwell and some of the other coaches. I just think it'd be a fascinating thing with some of the college coaches also in the mix. Like we talk about a Matt Campbell, people are always going to talk about Lincoln Riley, seeing those things, even though I think Lincoln Riley's situation is different. I would skew towards Matt Campbell than Lincoln Riley in a rebuild, because I've seen Matt Campbell do it at Toledo and then at Iowa State. Lincoln Riley kind of stepped into a plum job. Not to say he couldn't do it, but it's a different hustle.
Yeah. By the way, on the coaching thing, you can check out our interview with Brian Billick, which was excellent on Tuesday's podcast if you missed it. But I did see somebody tweeted out the other day, and I've look, I think if everything's equal, you want to lean towards an offensive coach if it's equal in terms of all the other checklists that you have, because, you know, look, if you hire a defensive head coach, you've got a young quarterback, he plays well, your coordinator's going to get a head coaching job, and now you're going to have to keep changing guys who are around him. So if it's close, yeah, I would lean towards the offense, but I wouldn't just say we're hiring an offensive guy versus, you know, we're not going to hire defensive guys, because I'm looking through the teams here. Let's look at the division winners or leaders right now. Buffalo, McDermott, defensive guy. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh, Tomlin, defensive guy. Titans, Vrabel, defensive guy. Then you go Chiefs, obviously Andy, offense. Giants, Joe Judge, special teams. Not an offensive guy. You go to Green Bay, LaFleur, offensive guy. Saints, Peyton, offensive guy. Rams is McVay, offensive guy. It's four and four. So four offensive coaches, four non-offensive coaches if we count Judge there. So just get the best dude, man. Just don't go into that saying this is I've got to have this or that.
No,
just
get to know these guys.
Get the best guy.
I think the end run around the defensive conversation, DJ, is if you hire a defensive guy and he brings in an older offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Not a young, hip, hot guy, an older offensive coordinator that, hey, this is what they do. I'm not saying a Tom Moore type, but a Tom Moore type where it's not the head coach thing may not be in the cards for them because of their age and because of some of those things, but someone who is still up on it and understands how to deal with young quarterbacks and is creative and innovative and does those things. I think Chan Gailey is kind of like a perfect example. Like you look down in Miami. I don't think Brian Flores has to worry about someone trying to pluck Chan Gailey away from him. And so you can build a program that may be sustainable.
That's interesting. It's definitely fascinating there. On the quarterback thing, anything you want to add that we didn't hit the other day on Hurts and Wentz and where this thing goes with the Eagles?
So here's my thing with Hurts and Wentz and all of this. And I'm going to take it off the players. I'm going to say now this is on the coaches, right? Because I still don't believe that the Eagles did a great job of setting Carson Wentz up for success. He hasn't played well. Man, I know that Doug may be on the appearance. Hey, man, we exhausted all options. We changed things around, and we tried to up the tempo. We tried to do all these other things. But I will say this. The one thing that is very apparent to me, they do not like running the football, and they refuse to take some of the
pressure. They've got a good back, too.
And they refuse to take some of the pressure off the quarterback by running the ball. And Miles Sanders has been productive. I mean, he has a nice yards per carry average. He has shown the ability to break off these big plays, and they do not lean into the running game. And so the Eagles will stay exactly the same if they try and play Jalen Hurts like they play Carson Wentz. If they continue to try and throw it all over the yard and do those things, you would get the same results, and Jalen Hurts will not look good. However, if they change their style, if they take this as an opportunity to hit the reset button, boom. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to run the football. We're going to be committing to getting 30 to 35 runs on the docket each week because we know we got to keep Jalen Hurts on a reasonable pitch count of 25, no more than 30 throws. I think that's what you want to do with him. Then they'll have a better chance because what that will do is it will change the way that the game plays out for them. Their defense won't face as many snaps because the clock is going to run. And so now you say, hey, Jim, you can be a little more aggressive with your pressure package because now we're trying to create negative plays and splash plays to get short fields. And so this has to be an overall sea change for the Eagles for the work. If it doesn't work and the defense is operating in its own silo, the offense is operating where we're trying to generate and score all these different points without worrying about how the rest of the team play, it's going to be an epic failure. We're going to see it happen immediately on Sunday.
All right, I want to give you one thing here. I'm not comparing. I'm not saying that these two players are the same, but stats are stats. Sometimes you just say, okay, look, stats are stats. I'm just going to give you the numbers. You do with them what you want here, okay? So when I look at Carson Wentz, this is 1, 2, 3, 4. This is his fifth year, right? So we look at those. You know, the first year was 16 touchdowns, 14 picks, kind of similar, right? Mm-hmm. Almost a 50-50, you know, touchdown interception ratio. And I'm just looking. I know there's a million other stats. This isn't the be-all end-all with touchdowns, picks. But then you have the good years following that. 17, you know, 33-7 touchdowns, picks. 21-7, 27-7. So those first year turnovers a little high. Three really good years. Mm-hmm. And then this year goes in the toilet. And I feel like – and I've said it. There's no example of that. Like, where can you see somebody that at that point in time in their career that has taken such a dive? Okay. Let me give you a guy by the name of Peyton Manning here real quick, Buck. his first year, Peyton Manning, 26 touchdowns, 28 picks, right? That's the big interception year. Then he goes 26-15, 33-15. But now you get into his, so this would be his fourth year, not his fifth year, but his fourth year. Peyton Manning, 26 touchdowns, 23 interceptions.
Man, that's a lot of
interceptions. So, yeah. 23 picks. Like, this is almost like kind of right there. And look, you know what they were? They were 6-10. The Colts were 6-10 that year. And after that, Peyton went on a tear. So I'm just saying I've been saying there's no example. Well, there is. I'm not saying Carson Wentz is Peyton Manning. Don't get that twisted. But Peyton Manning did not have a good year his fourth year in the league.
No, and I think we've reached this point where we're kind of in a microwavable society, and when it comes to quarterbacks, we feel like these guys can kind of do it. I will say this: a lot of times, I want to see from a coach how much easier can you make the game for the quarterback. Doug Peterson, part of the reason why he was beloved in making the run with Nick Foles is because he sat down and he figured out a way to make Nick Foles play at a higher level, because we saw those first couple games when he was in there, he was bad. And then what he did, he went all the way back and he found the tape when Nick Foles played really well under Chip Kelly. And basically it was do the same thing that they did under that. So my bewilderment when it comes to this is, man, we can't figure out what Carson did those three previous years and just run a simplified game plan that features those layups over and over again. So to me, that's the part that falls on him. Like, Doug, like, let's look at how Carson played at his best. And when your guy is struggling, you build the game plan with just his best things. Fewer plays, all of the plays that he does really, really well, more run game, and let him slowly build his confidence up. And look, maybe this is Carson's stubbornness on his own. I don't know, because you're not in the building, but I just feel like you have to help him. And then with the young quarterback in Jalen, if they attempt to run what I call a pro-style offense, that is the offense that we've seen Carson Wentz run, it's not going to work. I think Doug Peterson said this. He said they wanted some of that Taysom Hill effect. Well, then they need to play Jalen Hurts like he's Taysom Hill, not in terms of the multi-positional stuff, but we have seen Taysom Hill is consistently getting 8 to 12 carries, quarterback sweeps, zone reads, all that stuff. I want Jalen Hurts to do a mix of what he did at Alabama with a little mix of what he did at Oklahoma, because the Oklahoma stuff is fine, but I think he's more comfortable and probably better for his skill set doing the stuff that he did at Alabama, which featured quarterback run game.
Yep, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on the Eagles' defense and special teams, try and make up for some of that, take some of that pressure off, which, look, they hung in there with the Packers for a good while there before they played that long run.
They played okay on defense. Yep. Their biggest issue is offensively, not even in scoring points, the turnovers. The negative plays, the turnovers, the gift opportunities. And so I think when you do this, because let's look at the Saints, and the Saints are different in terms of, I would say, obviously they have better talent, but their defense wasn't playing at a high level. But then you put Taysom Hill in, they knew that they had to go up. So now did Dennis Allen change the way that he called defense? I don't know, but I know defensively they are a much different defense when they have Taysom Hill at quarterback. So.
Yep, that's fascinating, man. All right, anything else you want to add before we get out of here, Bucks? It's been a fun one.
No, it was a great one. Great conversation. Good discussion.
Yeah. Scrimmaging. This is what we call scrimmaging in the scouting world. Just scrimmaging ideas back and forth, and end up being pretty profitable there. All right. That's going to do it for us, you guys. Thank you so much for hanging with us today. Hope you guys have a wonderful football weekend, and we'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks, presented by Zaxby's.